This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, buying your first home can be a little bit scary, but the first step has been taken out with the fear and replaced with knowledge thanks to my guest, Elise Glink. A familiar voice here on WSB Radio as a former talk show host here. She's an award-winning TV and radio personality and best-selling author of more than a dozen books and publisher of ThinkGlink.com. Elise, it's great to have you back on the radio with me.
Hi, Belinda. It's so good to be here. Hello, Atlanta.
Yes, we've missed you so much. So, you've written this great book. It's in its fourth edition, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. And I have to say, really, not just any first-time home buyer, but any home buyer needs to ask.
Well, thank you. It's true. This is my first redo of this book in about 13 years, so it comes after the Great Recession. And as you know, I was on the air until about 3 years ago, so we walk through those together every Sunday morning with all of my listeners,
yes.
Many of whom are your listeners.
Yes.
And this book was really so very needed because everything has changed. And the biggest change, of course, is millennials have finally stepped up to the plate and are now the biggest home buying cohort, and they're very different.
Well, have they stopped renting and started buying?
Well, realtors would like them to buy even more, but yes, the oldest of the millennials have really stopped renting, and they've started to buy homes. They've started to get married, but the most interesting thing, Belinda, is that they've time shifted. This generation has time shifted all the major milestones. So 25 years ago, people were buying their homes, their first home, at age 25 or 26. And when they got, now they're buying their first homes at age 34. It's a big difference.
It is a big difference. And so when they start to look for a new home, and I thought, at least, do we still have you?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay. You're kind of cutting in and out just a little bit. We probably didn't pay the phone bill. So people are asking themselves, should I use an agent? Should I sell it myself? I can keep the commission if I sell it myself and pocket that money. What's the benefit of using an agent?
So the book is actually subtitled with answers from top brokers from around the country. And when I wrote the first three editions, and for this one too, I went to real estate agents because they're the ones who are on the ground seeing what goes on every single day. And I would talk to them about the questions that they were seeing that people were asking and what their responses were and how they were guiding real estate buyers and sellers. And, you know, agents really are your eyes and ears on the ground. And the thing about millennials is they do everything online. I'm sure you've seen this
yes.
with your own kids,
yes.
right? They have their phones right on their hands, and
right.
that's the end of it.
Right.
So really, you know, what you need to do is everybody's going to look online for their mortgage rates. You're going to look online on Zillow and Trulia and Pinterest and all these other places for homes that are for sale. But when it comes to actually going around and seeing them, you need somebody who's been in the market for a long time, knows the history of those houses in the neighborhoods, and can really guide you as to what's going to be best for you. And that's why I suggest you use a real estate agent.
Okay. If folks have questions for you, Elise, this is a great time to jump on the lines, 404-872-0750. That number again is 404-872-0750. So how do you know when they found the right home for them? I know the key thing that you want to stay away from is falling in love with the house. And that's what I do. I fall in love with a house, and then, you know, it doesn't matter. I'll get three jobs to pay for it if I have to. And that's a big no-no, right?
Yeah, you don't want to fall in love with a house you can't afford. And I don't think it's a good idea to fall in love with a house anyway. But we do end up having this instinctive reaction to space. And when the market is tight and fast like it is now, and home prices are rising and people are getting multiple offers on their properties, hello, good time to be a seller.
I know, which is crazy. I mean, how long has it been since you've seen a market like this, Elise?
Oh, it's easily been since 2005. And we haven't seen a market the way it is today since 2004 and 2005, and that was, of course, right before everything crashed. Now, I don't think we're going to crash that way because there were other issues going on behind the scenes, but, yeah, it's a hot market out there.
So if you have your house on the market and you're getting ready to sell, you could have multiple offers and get above your asking price.
Many homes are going for above asking price. And, of course, it depends how high you're listing it at. Those pie-in-the-sky prices don't seem so high anymore. But if you're a buyer, especially a first-time home buyer, and you go out and you know that there's this pressure that if you don't make an almost instantaneous decision, you may not get to buy a house at all because there will be multiple offers, that's where you end up getting into trouble. Because if you don't really know what you can afford, you don't know what that'll feel like on the other side of home ownership once you start fixing it up and, oops, the hot water tank broke,
right,
got to replace that. You can really get over your head financially and maybe do need that second or third job, and that's not a good place to be.
Okay, how do you find out what you truly can afford for a house?
Well, if you feel like doing numbers by hand, you can go buy my book and it'll show you. Or you can go online at thinklink.com or any one of about a million websites, and they've got a lot of different calculators, mortgage calculators. And it's not a bad way to start getting an idea of what you can afford. But the very best way is to contact three or four different mortgage lenders and say to them, hey, assume that this is my credit score, and this is my income, and this is my debt. What do you think I could afford? And lenders will tell you, that's called getting pre-qualified. And then before you actually go out and buy, what you want to do is get pre-approved. And that means you actually apply for the loan and you get approved for the loan and they'll fund it once, you know, as long as the house appraises out in value. And that's still the smartest way to go.
So each time you're going to these lenders, they are pulling your credit report and checking it. Is that doing anything harmful to your credit score?
Yes, which is why I recommend not doing that. So what you want to do is go to annualcreditreport.com, which is the place that the Federal Trade Commission requires the three credit reporting bureaus to set up this website, and you can get one free copy of your credit report from each of the credit reporting bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, once a year for free. And then you can either pay about $9 to get your credit score from one of them, or if you have, let's say, a Discover card or a Citi, most of the credit cards show you a credit score now. And if you get a free credit score from them, what I would do is take your free credit report and you take the free credit score and you go to a lender and you say, assume this is my credit score. And then they don't have to pull it, but you're still getting that same kind of general guidance as to whether you can afford a $500,000 house or a $50,000 house. And that's important to know.
So it's a ballpark.
It is.
Okay, that's great information. So therefore, it's not affecting your credit score.
Not at all.
Okay, it's 14 minutes after 2 o'clock. If you want to join us on the line, it's 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. Elise, we have James in Lawrenceville that's called, and he has a question for you. James, you're on WSB Radio. How are you today?
I'm good, and thank you so much for taking my call. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, sweetie.
Yeah, my question, Elise, is I'm actually a seller. I have some investment properties that I'm in the process of selling, you know, one at a time. And we've already sold one, and we actually had multiple offers. But one of the questions I had actually for you is when you're in that situation where you're getting above asking price on the offers, one of the risks is will it appraise for that much? You see these shows on TV that they're getting, you know, way above asking price, but we went through a particular offer that they offered us quite a bit more over than asking price, but the appraisal didn't come in at that high, so we couldn't accept the offer. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's really one of the big risks, James, because if it doesn't appraise out in value, which is what I said when you're talking about on the buying side, right, as long as the house appraises out in value, they'll fund that loan. So a couple of ways that that generally works out, if you know about what homes are selling for in your neighborhood, that's going to be a good place to start. And then you price your home just a little bit above that. But if you really think that, and the offers come in much above that, there's a couple of ways to solve it. One is that they take a loan for a smaller amount and they put more cash down. And some people are able to do that. In fact, I counseled a home seller who that exactly thing happened, where the buyer came back to them and said, oh, it didn't appraise out, and we want you to lower the price. And he said, I'm just going to relist it, and we'll see what happens. And if I don't get it, then I'm going to keep some of your, you know, good faith estimate, because that was, you know, that's you, not me. But they ended up coming back with another $20,000 or $30,000 in cash that they raised, and they ended up closing on the deal. So there are a couple of different ways for that to go. It's not a smart move for a buyer to do it, but it's great for sellers.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, James. You can join us on the line, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. My guest this hour is Elise Glink. She's the author of 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. And these are answers from top brokers from around the country. And it truly is a guide. And it's in easy chapters to understand and digest about how to purchase your first home. We're going to take our first break. We'll be back with Elise right after this. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
I'm more of Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Thank you, Scott, and welcome back to Atlanta Living, where we're speaking with Elise Glink and her latest book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. And we're taking your calls at 404-872-0750. And Elise, home buying doesn't have to be a scary thing. It can be kind of exciting.
I think it can be really exciting. It's really a nice time for home buyers, and first-time home buyers in particular, because there are so many great resources available. There's so much more information that people just have. They're smarter about it, and you've got companies that are sort of helping millennials attack their biggest problem, which is student debt loads. Student debt is pretty high.
Yes.
And so it's helping to get that paid down so they do qualify to buy a house.
I heard that student debt was greater than credit card debt right now.
There is something like 44 million Americans who have something like $1.5 or $1.8 trillion of student loan debt. And that is, I think it's a little more than credit card debt. It's just a huge number of people, though, that are affected. And believe it or not, I mean, just an aside, seniors are the fastest growing segment of people taking out student loans because they're signing for their grandchildren.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the phone lines and speak with Anna in Atlanta. Anna, you're on WSB. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks, Belinda. Elise, thank you for taking my call. I had a quick question. I'm not a first-time home buyer. It's been about 10 years since I have purchased, and I didn't know what the advice was these days on down payment, 5%, 10%, 20%. Now, what's your recommendation, and what will the banks accept?
So you can buy a house with as little as 3% or 3.5% down using an FHA loan. You can also get conventional financing for around that. If you are a VA member or you've got veteran status, you can actually buy a house with nothing down. If you put anything less, though, than 20% down, you're going to have to pay private mortgage insurance, and that's still really expensive. But if you can't do it any other way, you should try that. And then there is a great website that's actually an Atlanta-based company called DownPaymentResource.com, DownPaymentResource.com. And if you follow me on Twitter, I will put all these links up there
so that you
can find them later. But they actually help you map out what down payment assistance is available across the entire country by zip code. And you can it's free to use. You can go in there and look. I recommend it in my new book, my 100 Questions book as well. They're just great people, and they're based in Atlanta, and we've partnered with them for some different things over the years. So you can look there and see if you're eligible. Because you haven't bought a house in a long time, you may or may not be eligible because you're not a first-time buyer, but there's other kinds of assistance out there that you might be able to get into. And then finally, HUDHomestore.com. These are HUD homes. There aren't as many as there were like maybe 7 or 8 years ago, but you can get in them for as little as $100 or $200 down sometimes. So there are lots of different ways to explore not having enough cash for a down payment.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Anna, for your call. And it's 27 minutes after the hour. We want to remind you that WSB's Mark Arum set up a trust fund for the children of Deputy Chase Maddox. And our heart goes out to his family with the help of an oversight of our very own Clark Howard. If you would like to donate to the widow of Chase Maddox and his children, please donate today. The link is up at WSBradio.com. Our goal is $20,000. So condolences from the WSB family to the Chase Maddox family. And more news, weather, and traffic coming your way next, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton, and we are talking about buying your first house. How exciting. I remember my first house. I remember building my first house. And we have home real estate expert Elise Glink on the line with us. Welcome to the studio, Elise Glink.
Nice to be here.
And she's a familiar voice here on WSB Radio. She had a talk show on Sunday mornings here on WSB Radio. She is a media mogul here around the country, and she does radio and television and blogs and writes for different publications, publisher of thinkglink.com. She has over a dozen books, and she is an expert in the real estate field. So her 100 questions every first-time home buyer should ask is a must-have if you're in the market for your first home. So we're taking your calls today at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. So, Elise, I've always been concerned with when I'm buying a home that if I'm not paying the most commission for my agent, that they're not going to work as hard on my home.
Well, if you're buying a house, you don't generally pay the commission. You have a seller who's going to be paying the commission to both the buyer's agent and the seller's agent. So it's really nice for buyers because you get to work with a person who's knows what they're doing, has got a lot of business in the area, hopefully works with people who look just like you and are buying houses in the same price range, and you don't have to shell out of pocket for that person. The seller will take care of it. So there's really no reason not to use an agent.
So will the seller ask the buyer to half the commission sometimes, or is it always the buyer's responsibility for the commission?
No, it's always the seller's responsibility. So what the seller does is when they list a property, they have a listing agreement. And in the listing agreement, it spells out what amount of commission that they will pay, whether it's 4%, 5%, 6%. And then the agent's firms altogether have agreements with each other where they agree that they will share the commission generally on a 50-50 basis.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, how do I choose the right agent or broker? And I see people have, you know, they'll say they're a broker or they're an agent. Is there a difference in those terms?
Sure. So an agent is somebody who works for a broker, or a person who is a broker who generally has an extra license above the regular agent's license. So they have more years of experience, they've taken more classes, and they've taken another exam. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the broker is a better person for you than an agent, right? Because while the broker may have more experience, it may not be with people in your price range, it may not be in your neighborhood. And what you really want to do is drive around your neighborhoods of choice if you figured out where you might want to live. And then look at all the signs that are out there and what agents are working in those, what firms. And then you call up and you say, I want to talk to somebody who really does a lot of work in this area. And you can ask to speak to the managing broker who runs that particular office or the firm. And that person should connect you to somebody who works in your neighborhood. And then you interview a bunch of different agents and get a sense of how they work with you. Because really, when you hire an agent, it's like a short-term marriage. And you definitely want somebody that you're compatible with.
Okay, good. So when I think about getting ready to buy a new home, where do I start my search? That seems kind of overwhelming. Do I already need to have a neighborhood picked out when I select my agent or broker?
Well, you should know, right? Because if you're going to look, say, you know, up north versus looking in the city, you're going to want different people to help you out with that. Different agents have different areas of expertise, and it's much better to be with somebody who's an expert in Midtown, for example, in condos or co-op. Well, you don't have co-ops really in Atlanta, but condos in Midtown versus somebody who sells single-family homes up in Marietta, right? Those are two very different markets. And they wouldn't translate easily, right? The person could say, well, I guess I could look online for you, but they don't know that neighborhood like the back of their hand. And so when you talk to agents, You want to ask them about their experience, about who they've worked with and what their typical home buyer looks like. And then you have to decide if that's who you look like and what you're interested in. And then that's how you really go about finding it. In terms of on the other side, how do you know where you should start looking? That really comes down to one of the very early questions in the book. I want you to draw up a wish list, meaning everything you've ever wanted in your house, including location and school district.
Okay.
And then your reality check of what you can't live without. And you should do it, and your spouse or partner should do it. And then you should sit down with a big bottle of wine and go through those lists and mush them into one big list.
Now,
and
what chapter is that bottle of wine in? I'm looking for it. I'm looking.
Yeah, right. If you just open up page 42, okay. It's right there. So it's really about knowing yourself. And once you know yourself, then you can start to find areas that you like, and then you find the real estate agent.
And maybe they can help you, both of you, come together if you're having trouble combining the list and really narrowing down what you truly both want and compromising.
It is. And I think you have to really understand, if you're a first-time buyer, you're not going to get everything you want. So
for your price range.
Right. It's not even about price as much. And I'll tell you this story. We have some young cousins who are millennials, and they have two little babies. They're so adorable. And they're renting in a neighborhood near us. And they decided they wanted to buy a house. But they're driving their kids to a private school that's probably 45 minutes south. And then they turn around, and then they go north to their jobs. Mm-hmm. And they spend 2-3 hours in the car every day. And I said, well, you know, this is clear. Like, what's the top priority? Being near where you work or near this school for your kids? Mm-hmm. Like, there's one or the other. You can't do both. And so they haven't actually gone out to start looking at houses because they can't decide which one is the top priority. And if that's the case and you've got two competing priorities that are really mutually exclusive, you should rent for a while and figure it out.
Okay, great advice. Okay, well, everybody knows somebody that knows somebody that's an agent. Do you go with somebody you know?
No. I mean, you may end up there, but let's just say Aunt Sally, who's the real estate broker, or Grandma's best friend,
yeah,
who's a real estate broker. Again, it's where are you looking? And so in the beginning, when you haven't chosen your agent and somebody says, oh, you should talk to this friend, I always recommend a standard answer. And the standard answer is, absolutely, please send me their contract information and we'll give them a call. But of course, so many of our friends and relatives have recommended real estate agents, we're going to talk to them all and then make a decision based on where we're going to look. And then what you've done is you have acknowledged that they're trying to help you, and you've also told them that you have other family members that are doing exactly the same thing, and that they shouldn't expect you're automatically going to choose their person. And that gives you cover, and that's really what you want.
Okay. Now let's talk about financing, because you've got to pay for this investment. What are the nuts and bolts of financing this home?
So since the Great Recession, you're pretty limited, and there's kind of like a black box. And if you fit in the black box, meaning you have a W-2, you've been at your job for a couple of years, you have the right kind of savings, and you have the right kind of credit score, and you check all these little marks, then it's pretty easy to get a loan. It gets tougher if you're self-employed, if you have changed jobs recently, if you don't have a lot in savings, if you have an extraordinary amount of debt. It can be a lot harder to buy a house. And it's good to know that stuff up front, because if you know it, you can start to fix it over time. And so about a year before you're thinking about buying a house, you want to take a hard look at the assets you have, the debts that you owe, and how much the home's cost where you think you want to be. And you can start doing some basic math around whether you're going to be able to qualify for a home loan or not. And there's some other ways to do it, right? The seller might qualify you and act as the bank for a while. You may be able to borrow some money from a family member for a down payment. You may get one of these downpaymentresource.com, grants. But you really have to start figuring that out ahead of time. And generally, it takes 6 months ahead, 6 months to 3 to 6 months to really figure out all those numbers, and then you can start looking.
What about pulling your credit report ahead of time to see if there are problems on your credit report that might show up and throw you a curveball?
Absolutely. So at annualcreditreport.com, you can get a free copy of your credit report from each of the credit reporting bureaus once a year, and you can get a credit score. But I'll warn you that not everything that might be a problem will turn up on just one of those credit scores. So Experian collects data that Equifax doesn't. Equifax collects data that TransUnion doesn't. And so the reason it's a good idea to get all three mm-hmm. is to compare and contrast and to see what might be going on there.
Are there different types of mortgages out there that people can consider that might be better for one person and different types of mortgages that you can customize?
There are, but not as many as there were before the Great Recession.
Okay.
So you pretty much everybody today gets a fixed-rate mortgage. And today, the fixed-rate mortgages this week, they're at 4.25%. Mm-hmm. So they're up about 0.5%. And if you're on the very edge of homeownership, you're going to feel that. It's not a lot of money every month. It might be an extra $50 to $100, but every little bit counts. And that's we see mortgage interest rates continuing to go up a little bit. So you want to figure that out again ahead of time.
What is the best way to avoid? What's the percentage that you need to do again to avoid PMI?
20%. So you can buy a house for less, but then you'll pay 20%. And just to be really clear, there's different kinds of insurance. So private mortgage insurance is not about you, the buyer. All it does for you, the buyer, is enable you to buy a house. It protects the lender in case of default, and the lender is protected for that top 20% of the home. So if you go into default, that private mortgage insurance payment that you've been making every month isn't going to help you one bit.
Okay, because I feel like you're just kind of throwing money away on PMI. Am I the only one?
You're throwing money away, but on the other hand, you wouldn't be able to buy a house if you had that. So
right.
For you, the problem is that, you know, if you don't have the private mortgage insurance and you don't have 20% to put down, you're not going to be a home buyer.
Right.
So you have to decide what you really want to do. The thing to watch out for, though, is, you know, when you have private mortgage insurance, once you get enough equity in the house, you can either refinance and get rid of it, which is great, or when you reach a certain level, it's a little bit higher, the bank will just automatically cancel it. But if you're getting an FHA loan, you're going to pay their version of private mortgage insurance for a long time to come.
So, Elise, we have about a minute left. How does a person know when they're ready to be their first-time home buyer? Is it more emotional or more financial?
I think you look around and you're running out of space, either because you have dogs. That's, believe it or not, one of the top reasons millennials are buying houses for their dogs. Or you've got kids. Or you're just sick of running into your spouse or partner in the bathroom. So I think that's generally what's happening out there. But I do, before we go, I do want to say to everybody, I've really missed my listeners at
yes.
WSB, and it has been so fun to get some of these questions and talk to you again, Belinda, about all this. It's just been great. Thank you.
It's been such a joy to have your voice back on WSB this hour. Elise Glink, thank you so much. And where can people follow you and find these links that you've talked about that you're going to put up today?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, G-L-I-N-K, at thinkglink.com. I still have my free weekly newsletter, and you can find me there. And then I have a Facebook fan page, just like everybody else seems to these days. And would love to hear from everybody. It's just great to be back in Atlanta.
Good to hear you, Elise. You've been listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Belinda Skelton.
And welcome back, y'all, to Atlanta Living. It is time for Breaking Chews. Now, this is our weekly check-in on all the up-to-the-minute breaking news about local restaurants, chefs, and festivals. I'm here with our favorite foodie correspondent, David Danzig, of the website BitesAndSights.net, and also a food writer for Atlanta Social Season magazine, and, of course, BelindaSkelton.com. So, a new contender in the pizza game?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. Giulio Adriani, he's a native Roman, so from Rome.
Wow.
Rome, Italy, not Rome, Georgia. and he was a number cruncher. He was like an accountant for a living and just decided that he wanted to make pizza. So, first he studied under his grandmother, and she was an honest-to-goodness Neapolitan pizza master.
Mm-hmm.
Then he studied under some world-renowned chefs. Eventually, he was promoted to master instructor of one of the most revered pizza associations in Naples, Italy. He used to actually be the guy that would fly in to cities to certify restaurants as authentic Neapolitan
wow.
pizza. Like, there's a stringent code that you have to follow. Then he went on to win the gold medal at the Pizza Championship in Salso Maggiore, Italy, in 2010. He also holds the Guinness World Record for the longest pizza in the world. It was a 1.3-mile-long pizza.
Good grief.
So to top it off, Giulio's signature pizza, it's called the Montanara. It's a flash-fried crust.
Wow.
It's so unusual and addictive, it was credited for the reason his green card to America was approved. Now, I'm not making any of this up. So, yeah, Giulio, this dude has some mad skills and credentials. And believe it or not, he's over in Midtown West cooking pizzas now at this new place called the Loco Pizziolo. And there's plans to actually open three of them this year. So the Loco Pizziolo, that means pizza maker, they serve these beautiful pizzas. It's kind of like the places in town, you know, some of these places that charge like $20+ for a pizza. But it's a fast, casual experience. You walk up and you order at the counter and they bring it out. But the pizza, the quality, they've got classics like the margarita, the marinara. They have these signature pies. One's called Dante's Kiss, made with Calabrian peppers. And they do one called the Local. They take Heirloom Market Barbecue, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
They do this miso marinated brisket. They bring that into the mix, along with aged provolone and cipollini onions, smoked hot honey. I mean, this is one of the most flavor explosive savory pizzas I've ever tasted. They've got salads and gelatos, beer, wine. They got a few cocktails, and there's even a little market. So the Loco Pizziolo, it's over on the west side. Really interesting story. It's just a really neat place, and there's going to be more of them coming down the pipeline. So I've got some pictures and more information up at belindaskelton.com.
Oh, I can't wait to try it. Where can we find you during the week?
My website is bitesandsites.net, and my handle is bitesandsites, B-I-T-E-S, the letter N-S-I-T-E-S.
Okay, can't wait to see what you bring to the table next week. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.